This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
And we're shifting gear yet again. We are debating or discussing this ruling that has been done by CAS, this relating to Caster Semenya. Remember that she had gone to CAS to try and appeal the IAAF's decision around lowering her testosterone levels, and the decision has come out. It's been an issue that has been dominating the headlines as well as trends on various social media. I see even international media has been carrying this story because it's such an important story. And to discuss to discuss this ruling with us, we are joined by Prof. Ross Tucker. Good day, Prof. Hi, Prof. Can you hear me? Hello, Prof. Can you hear me?
Hello. Yes, I can hear you. How are you?
Perfect. I'm doing well, Prof. Are you doing well?
Yeah, I'm fine. Obviously disappointed in that decision, but we're lucky it doesn't affect us directly. There are people who are affected directly by it, and I'm sure they're doing far worse than we are.
Mm-hmm. Tell me, why exactly is it that you're disappointed with this ruling?
Well, I think that the case that we put forward in Switzerland earlier this year, you know, that's from the Semenya side and the Athletic South Africa side, was a pretty strong one, that the scientific evidence that underpins the regulations was insufficient. You know, we spoke a great deal there and had done before about how in order to have a policy, you need to have good science. And we didn't think that the science in this instance was good enough to justify the policy. And that's because the policy requires that these athletes take medication. I think that there's a risk of harm. I would have some concerns about their medical and ethical rights. And so we tried hard to convince the court that overall the policy was invalid. The decision means that we failed. And the consequence of that is that Semenya now has to take drugs, not just her, by the way, other athletes, they have to take these drugs in order to compete. And that's obviously disappointing for them.
Well, certainly. I just want to quickly bring in Ambassador Nosipho Matlakatu Diseko, who's joining us from Geneva. Ambassador, thank you so much for making time for us. Just quickly take us back, Ambassador, to that decision that was taken by the United Nations Human Rights Council to throw its weight behind Caster Semenya. Why it was so important for you to sponsor that debate and leading to that resolution, and where the country finds itself now and where Caster Semenya finds herself now?
Morning, Aldrin and viewers. Let me just also use this opportunity to explain, to give a background to the involvement of the Human Rights Council, which, of course, is outraged that at this day and century, you would have a group of people taking it upon themselves on dubious information, which is virtually tantamount to a suspicion, to put in place regulations that violate a series of human rights. Five mechanisms of the Human Rights Council. These are investigative mechanisms that oversee and report, had written letters to the IAAF objecting to this on the basis of the fact that this violates the convention, for example, on torture, and the convention on against discrimination, a variety of instruments in internationally. Now, it is not just a ruling against Caster, it is a ruling against a whole host of women, especially women in developing countries. This is our concern in Geneva. This is what motivated South Africa to lead in drawing up the resolution and rallying many of the countries to adopt this resolution. Clearly, there is a gap at international law that needs to be closed, so that while states have got obligations to fulfill, international bodies as well know that they have a responsibility to fulfill those obligations, that they are bound by them. What has happened here is that, I will simplify it, how we understand it is that it was on the basis of suspicion that we think, as you compete, Caster, you might have something that we need to understand which we don't know. That is wrong from the beginning to even pose that question. So in response to that, we're going to put something in place that will curb your natural advantage. And another simple analogous explanation of this is that, you know, you walk into a class, there's a child with a high IQ, others do not have that high IQ. Is IAF or CAS saying now countries have to take measures to limit children who've got high IQs so that children with normal IQs that are below average or average can compete with them? No, that cannot be the case. So the resolution that was adopted by the Human Rights Council calls on the commissioner for High Commissioner for Human Rights to report on this. As from now on, IAAF and CAS decisions will be subject to scrutiny, and we will continue to generate resolutions that bring them, that make them accountable under international human rights law. There's an element of racism here. There's an element of discrimination on the basis of gender, simply on what somebody suspects from looking at you. They looked at Casta, and they came to the conclusion that we need to build a case to say that she is different. How can that be at this day and age? It's absolutely incorrect, and there is no leg on which they can stand on it, international human rights law.
Ambassador, let me just quickly bring in Professor Tucker here. Professor Tucker, yesterday you were doing one interview on one of the news channels, and when this question was brought up around there being an element of racism, you said that actually we should be more cautious when it comes to making such a conclusion.
Yeah, I think that's, if I'm going to be frank here, I think that's a knee-jerk reaction. I think it puts up barriers to having discussion about what's actually in play here. This is an issue that dates back to 1936 in the Olympic Games in Berlin, where it was a Polish athlete and a German athlete who were questioned for the same basis. Over the last 85 years, there's probably been at least a dozen cases I can think of. They include Russian athletes, they include Polish athletes, they include a Spanish 400-meter hurdler, they include athletes from South America, they include athletes from the Far East and Asia. I don't think that there is any evidence for me to suggest that this is a racist issue. If the IAAF were racist, they should target marathons and 10,000 and 5,000, which are being utterly and completely dominated by athletes from Kenya and Ethiopia. And I think this basically boils down to bad science, bad policy, bad governance. I don't disagree with any of that, but I can't bring myself to concede that this is racially motivated. I just think there's no evidence. In fact, there's evidence to the contrary.
I see yesterday there were a lot of comparisons that have been drawn between Casta Semenya as well as a Russian athlete. Might just struggle pronouncing her surname here, Kratokhavela Vilova.
Yeah.
That back in 1983, she set a record, but there was no issues that were raised around her level of testosterone, and that record still remains in place.
Yeah, so it is a mouthful. It's Jarmila Kratochvilova. She's from the Czech Republic, and that world record in 1983 is the oldest world record in women's athletics. That world record was almost certainly achieved with doping. She's never come out and said as much. But in the 1980s, they couldn't test for testosterone and other drugs during competitions. And so all the women's records go back to the 1980s. If you ever have the opportunity, you'll see that. You'll see the 100, the 200, the 400, the 800. They all date. The long jump, shot put, discus, all of them, 1980-something. And that's because the women in that time were using testosterone. So many people have argued that the fact that Semenya is challenging that record is actually proof that testosterone makes a difference. So it's one of those issues in this debate where it's so complex that the same fact, in other words, Kratochvilova's world record is untouchable, is used by some people to support Semenya and by some people to support the IAAF.
Ambassador, just responding to what the Prof Tucker is saying around the issue around being more careful and cautious when it comes to, it's just saying outrightly that this is, this has an element of racism to it.
I think, on the contrary, because of the challenges we have with combating racism, we cannot rule out. The mandate of the Human Rights Council is to address racism. Precisely because it's a huge challenge. So the onus is on IAF to prove that there's no component of this. But with the recent cases, we see, I think, the cases that are coming up are coming from developing countries and of a particular, not European or Caucasian, as it were. But the rule for us at the Human Rights Council is to err on the side of a caution. Similar to gender-based violence. I mean, you don't ask now a woman to prove that they've been beaten, but where there are bases that this might be happening, it has to be investigated and kept under a scrutiny, as it were. We're saying this also because of the danger that the caste has been placed at, in terms of stigmatization as an African woman and as a woman globally. The minute suspicion was cast at her capability, in a manner that was also pejorative. It wasn't like a nice kind of way that this has been done, and what is being supposed to be done is certainly not going to be a pleasant thing to be done. So we are cautious in the human rights field. We err on the side of caution, and the critical thing being prevention as we protect human rights.
What happens now for the Human Rights Commission?
The Human Rights Commission will receive a report on this from, remember, the resolution requests the High Commissioner for Human Rights to do a report on this whole matter. And there will be recommendations that are made on this. And we hope that these recommendations will be a basis for discussion globally. We need to have a discussion about the accountability of structures such as the IWAF.
Yeah, and earlier on, actually, you spoke about the gap that there is when it comes to these structures. What exactly is it that the Human Rights Council has identified some of these gaps are? Because these are not organizations that operate in isolation. These are organizations that operate within various countries that are members of the United Nations, countries that have democratic laws that govern how we treat human beings.
I think it is in their perception that they are exempt from international human rights law. That has to change. They're not exempt from human rights law. I think our conduct fundamentally, globally, be it in economic affairs or political affairs, must be founded on international human rights instrument, whether you're in business or you are in other area. There's a sense in which IF has put itself in a position where it says it is exempt from international human rights law. It cannot be. We need to close that gap. This will place a responsibility also on member states to move together to make sure that there's accountability while allowing for the independence that they might have as a specialized body that regulates sporting, as it were. There must be a way in which international organizations account, especially for what it is that they are doing to combat racism, to combat gender stereotyping, to combat a discrimination, and not to lay the basis for conduct that may be tantamount to the violation of conventions that are as important as the Convention Against Torture and inhumane, cruel and inhumane treatment. What's particularly relevant here is that a key, it is more the Convention on Torture and Cruel and Inhumane Treatment that is applicable here. The part that talks about cruel and inhumane treatment, to subject a person or to require a person to alter themselves in order to satisfy conditions that you've decided arbitrarily, falls within the scope of that convention. So and how do we bring sporting bodies to be accountable?
And Ambassador, I know that you have to leave, but just quickly, comparing what's expected of Caster Semenya or what's expected of any other female athlete with regards to this ruling that has been delivered, why don't we do the same when it comes to men? It almost seems as though that there's an unfair emphasis on what women are expected to do, and we're not actually looking at what men are also expected to do. If we're saying that all the rules must apply and all athletes are seen to be equal, male and female.
I agree with you on the point that you're raising, but for me, the most insulting part is the creation of a situation where it'll now be enough to look at a woman, and on the basis of an unfounded suspicion, you determine the degree to which they're a woman and not a woman. That is totally unacceptable.
Okay, then. Thank you so much, Ambassador.
That
I know
totally
that you have to.
Unacceptable.
You have to rush off. Just in closing, Ambassador.
Something is going on.
Sorry.
Just by the way she looks, that is discrimination first and foremost. We suspect there's something going on just by the way she looks. So we're going to put in place certain things. We're going to investigate. We're going to subject her to some kind of scrutiny that is humiliating and degrading. And then come to the conclusion that we have to regulate. How can a body take it upon itself to say, henceforth, we are going to regulate being a woman? They've taken it upon themselves to say that they will set the standard of what it is to be a woman.
Ambassador, I just need you to quickly... Ambassador, can you hear me? Hi, Ambassador, can you hear me? Hello? Okay, we seem to have lost connection there with the ambassador. We'll try to get her back online. We have a call here from Sean, who's joining us from Greenstone. Sean, you are saying that it's actually not the case that this is a racist issue.
Yeah, good morning, and congratulating your position. I'm sure we'll be chatting a lot. And good morning to your guest. Yeah, I think it's a really sad situation when somebody of her position jumps to these claims, and I wish she was still on the line. But, you know, it not only is it really false, but it devalues real racist claims when we just jump to racism, or it's like in this situation. And unfortunately, this is just a basic science and biology issue that we're dealing with. And it's something that we really need to educate ourselves on as a society before we just make claims, you know. Testosterone is a hell of a powerful hormone within the body, and it's the exact reason, or the same hormone that makes men faster and stronger than women at the end of the day, just to break it down simply. And, you know, from the beginning, I've been very vocal on this issue, and I've said always I feel very sorry for Custer, because I don't think she asked for this, but at the end of the day, she has enjoyed these benefits of testosterone, and you can just see her size in muscularity and build compared to her competitors. It's not even comparable. And it's an issue we're going to be dealing with a lot, I think. I mean, there's a case in America at the moment where there's a wrestler called Max Beggs, who was a man her whole life.
Sean, just a quick one. We have the ambassador back online. A question that you want to pose to her quickly, and then she'll answer, and then we'll continue with the conversation just after the headlines.
Yeah, it's not really a question. It's just a comment that I feel that, you know, whenever we jump to racism claims, it devalues real racism in our society. And especially when we're dealing with an issue of biology and science, and not really racism or some sort of moral prejudice that we're dealing with. So I just think we need to make sure that we deal with real racism claims as racist, and leave these science and biology issues to be nothing more than that.
Okay, Ambassador, how do you respond to that?
I don't really agree with that view. Where there are signs and there are basis to conclude that discrimination is taking place, and especially that has a racial component, we must react. This is what South Africa is founded on. South Africa is an anti-racist state. We need to be vigilant against racism, as we need to be vigilant against anything that denigrates women. I picked up a little bit of what Sean was saying. To me, it seems that you have a body that has decided that just by the way you look, one. And on suspicion of how you look, we must put in place intrusive measures that violate the right to privacy. But above all, no one enters into the field of determining the womanness of a woman. This is what's being questioned.
Okay.
And I wonder how easy this would be. We're having, I think, cases that are coming up in developing countries of people who are not white. The Kenyan, the Indian.
Mm-hmm.
And the stigma, that the reaction that these athletes are subjected to cannot be separated from racism. It cannot. But there's more to this than that. There's a violation of other conventions. The convention to torture, as I said.
Yeah.
Cruel and inhumane treatment. Discrimination on the basis of gender. And a violation also, I think, of scientific practice. Ethical issues that come into that. It's a whole amalgam. I have a difficulty with people who are really very sensitive to the question of race being raised, because it means we're never going to have to be comfortable, to reach a point where we're comfortable in coming together to address race.
Okay, then. Thank you so much for your time, Ambassador Nosipho Maxakatu-Diseko, who is our ambassador to the United Nations Human Rights Council in Geneva. Thank you so much for your time. She insists that there is an element of race. I wonder what your take is on this, and you can be part of this conversation. Join the conversation on 0861-987-000. That's 0861-987-000. And after Power News headlines, we'll take the call from Sean. Sean will complete his sentiments, and then we'll speak with Professor Tucker.
Tweet Aldrin at Aldrin Sampier.
We're still continuing the conversation around that ruling by CAS yesterday that was announced around the appeal application by Caster Semenya, by this resolution that was taken by the IAAF. And the conversation still continues. We still have Professor Tucker on the line, as well as Sean, one of the callers who called in earlier on. Sean, just before I let you go, I need you to quickly wrap up the sentiment that you wanted to make and then answer this question that comes on Twitter from Tekelo, who says, how can Sean say that this is not about race? Ask him how other capabilities are regulated. Caster isn't using any stimulus to improve. It's how she is, just like, and no other athletes coming with their own advantages. It is racism. How do you respond to that, Sean?
Well, this touches on one of the ambassador's points. The first is that the record holder, as you alluded to earlier, was a white female. And I think that there's always been a question mark hanging over her head. And I wish that the science was as good as it was back today as it was back then, because then we could kind of challenge these issues. So, I mean, the fact that the record holder is still having a question mark over her head kind of shows that this isn't an issue, because she was white. With regards to it's a very, very complex issue. We get into the realms of gender now and the different types of gender, and it's a debate an issue that's hotly debated still to today. It's a very weird situation where they start merging from a male to a female, and I think we need to kind of sort those issues out in the science realm to kind of address those issues. I mean, one of the points I wanted to bring up was about Max Beggs, who's a wrestler, a Greco wrestler in America, who just won his or her second national title. She was a boy her entire life until she was 18, and then decided to transition to a female. And she enjoyed all the benefits of testosterone that it brings whole life. And now she's literally smashing the competition. They can't even compete with her. So I just think it's a complete disregard for how powerful testosterone is. When you see a bodybuilder walking around, you know, the big guys with the big muscles, that is testosterone. Yes, there's growth hormones and other things involved, but the main issue is testosterone that they're taking. So, no, we really just have to appreciate that if you take testosterone, you will be bigger, you will be faster, you will be stronger. And unfortunately, which I really say I feel sorry for her, because she didn't meaningfully take these substances. She's just naturally been gifted it. We need to appreciate that it is a powerful drug. And in closing, what I really wish, because I do have huge respect for Custer, I think she's an amazing athlete, is that she takes these suppressants, goes out there and still blows the competition away like she's been doing, because I truly believe she can. And I think that, you know, there's no reason why she shouldn't now.
Okay, then. Thank you so much, Sean. Let's see. Professor Tucker, do you agree with that? Is that an option for Custer to take these suppressants?
I agree with some of it. I don't agree with some other parts. I think Sean correctly raised an important concept around the issue of testosterone and what it does biologically. I think that's quite an important point. And on that issue, the IAAF, in my opinion, have got a very good theoretical argument. The problem is whether there's evidence to suggest that what he's talking about is true in a DSD. What he's talking about is true in a man. So a person who is born a boy and is identified as a boy, raised by their family and their community as a male, and who then transitions to become a female is a different person to someone who is a DSD like a Caster Semenya. And I think he then oversimplifies the testosterone argument and applies what is true for men as if it were the case for a DSD. And I think that's where this argument becomes a little bit more complex, and you need evidence to assess that. Because what you're dealing with there is that a person with a DSD, so Caster Semenya, is not a trans man or trans female. It's different from transgender.
Yeah.
That person has probably got an advantage, and I'll say that here, is I believe that there is an advantage to having high testosterone levels, but I don't know how big it is. It could be 0.1%, and it could be 10 to 12%. That would mean that it was the full male advantage if it was 10 to 12%. But we don't know where it is. And if you don't know where it is, then how can you regulate it in comparison to other things? So how can you say that a 3% advantage is worth regulation, whereas maybe a 5% is not? Maybe you could say that, but where do you put this one?
Yeah.
In other words, there's a spectrum of possibilities, and until someone can show me where on that spectrum this particular case lies, I am very uncomfortable with introducing a policy that forces potential harm on that athlete.
Mm-hmm.
Because make no mistake, an athlete who then has to take a medicine, and now I'm finally answering the question, sorry, athlete who has to take drugs to lower their testosterone is inviting potential side effects on themselves.
Actually, we had a call earlier on from Dr. Mishak during our open line, who actually mentioned this, that there are side effects, and these side effects could be detrimental.
Well, that's the problem. And there's a few different aspects to this. First of all, nobody has ever done this before.
Oh, wow, really?
There's never been a situation in medicine where you prescribe high doses of oral contraceptives for a person to use pretty much permanently throughout their lives. So nobody knows what the medical protocol is. Nobody knows what the safety is. Nobody, therefore, can assess what the ethics are. And so I think there are some concerns in that respect. Nobody knows if it's going to work and what it could do, is the bottom line. What it will do is it will detract from performance. So on this issue, again, I don't know how much. Will it make her 1% slower, 2%, 5%? We don't know. But because testosterone is such an important molecule in the body, or hormone in the body, when you take it away, her body fat levels will go up, her muscle mass will probably come down, her hemoglobin levels will drop. And the consequence of those three things is that her performance must be affected. So I would be extremely surprised if she can stay at the same level. Maybe she'll get slow by a small enough amount that she can still win, but I would be very surprised if she's as dominant now as she, well, in future, as she has been in the past. So the only other option available to her is that she could decide not to take the medicine for health reasons or principle, medical ethics, but then she can't run the 800 and the 1500. She would have to go and run the 3000 and the 5000. So that's really where we are, and that's why this decision was such a blow, because it puts her in a situation where she has to choose the least worst option.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's just quickly go to Basil in Boksburg. Good morning, Basil.
Morning, and congratulations on your new slot.
Thank you, man.
Mine is very simple. You see, I'm highly irritated by Sean, because when he says this is not racism and sexism, I don't know what more can it be. And I'll tell you, during apartheid, there were all sorts of explanations which were given why black people were inferior. You had all these religious explanations and so forth and so on. So for me, I'll tell you... Ella?
You can go ahead, Basil.
Okay. So mine is this. Look, why is it that we are targeting specifically the tracks that she's running at? You understand? Why not other ones? Only the ones that she's running. And the last bit of what the professor has said, it actually says this is actually racism, because he says to us, no one knows what is going to happen when she takes this particular depressant.
Mm.
So you're saying, okay, calm lady, you're a professional, but we don't really like how you were born. We're just going to do experimentation on you. We don't know what is going to happen. It might bring depression, but we don't really care because you're black. That's actually what it means, the whole thing. So I agree with the ambassador wholeheartedly. This is racism and sexism.
But what the prof is also saying is that this resolution by the IAAF does not only apply to Custer, it applies to all female athletes. So we can't really make the argument
At the moment, who's the other athletes who are affected by this?
Mm-hmm. It's only Custer. That's a fact. That's a fact, yeah.
Yeah. So you can't say, we don't target only you, but you are the only one who's wearing the red top in the room at the moment. So, but it's not about you, but it just happens that you are the only one who's... It's about her. It's not about anyone else.
Mm.
Yeah.
So what do you think should happen now? Do you think that Custer should take this matter on appeal?
She should. She should. And I want to say I applaud the spirit of that woman because, you know, she's been humiliated again and again and again and again. It's not her fault that she was born that way. It's totally not her fault. You know, when you start to come with science, which it's not proven. Because for me, the last bit of what the professor has said, it's very uncomfortable to say. Actually, no one knows what's going to happen. And no one cares about what is going to happen. But, okay, we're going to take this particular ruling. So for me, it's very uncomfortable.
Okay. Thank you, Basil. Prof, have you had any discussion with Custer yet about what the next step is for her?
No, I haven't. I don't know what her thinking is at this stage. I mean, we just discussed what the options are available to her, and she will have to make a decision on which of those to pursue. The issue about appeals is that obviously the CAS, which gave this decision, is the highest court in sports. And so if she is to appeal this, she has to take her appeal outside of sports, and that happens in the Swiss federal system. Or she could go to the European courts and so forth and argue. The problem with that is obviously time and costs. I don't know how long it takes to move through that legal system. As I'm sure you know, the legal system can move very slowly sometimes, and this is an issue that you can't afford to move slowly because she's got 2 or 3 years. It could literally take that long to appeal. I don't know.
Wow.
And then cost, obviously, is a big deal. So they'll have to make a decision. It depends, I guess, on her appetite for the fight. Does she want to fight this even more? And it depends on some of the legal and logistic things that I'm not particularly qualified to comment on. So. Yeah.
And if you look at the statement that was released, she speaks about this not only being about her, but being about other women as well.
Yeah, and I think that's quite important. I mean, I listened to the previous call, obviously the ambassador that I also disagreed with. I understand why people see it as sexist and racist, but it's not, because the policy applies to everyone. I think I will make the concession that there are issues around the implementation of the policy which can appear racist. So, for instance, how do you identify who needs to be regulated? Oftentimes it's based on physical appearance, and that's a subjective assessment. You know, how do you judge whether someone looks too masculine or not? That seems pretty arbitrary and really, really ripe for arbitrary exploitation or misinterpretation and racism. So I think on the implementation side, there are aspects of this policy that might appear racist. But as a concept, I don't think that it is, because it applies to all women, and it has applied in the past, not the specific one, but this issue to athletes from Western Europe, South America, and the Far East.
Hmm.
So I think it's important then to emphasize that this issue affects many athletes. I'm not going to say exactly how many, but it's far more than you might think. And it's not fair that Castor Semenya is the only one who has to fight this battle. I wish that they would get together and combine their efforts to fight this.
Yeah.
But you're absolutely right. It is an issue that affects more than just one person.
And she's probably the face of the campaign as well. Let's go to Solomon in Kempton Park. Good morning, Solomon.
Good morning, my brother, and good morning to your listeners and your visitors. How are you?
Siyaphila, Ba.
Baba, I'm great. Bra, I've got just a question or two here. My question is, if Custer was probably a white person, a white woman, and born that way, winning like she did and doing her best like Custer is doing, would this thing have come up, and would the rules and regulations and policies being amended just to try and squash her down? Secondly, is we had a customer, what you call Zola Bard, Zola Peters, you'd remember her name, the lady who was winning 5,000, 3,000 meters, and she was running bare feet, whereas other people were running with shoes and all that. Was she not having an advantage because she was barefoot and lighter than her component? Her competitors. And the other thing is, if Caster was in a different sport, maybe boxing, wrestling, or whatever, would this have been brought up? Thank you very much, sir.
Okay, and let's go to Tekelo. Good morning, Tekelo.
How are you?
Good. I see you are angry. You are not good.
No, I'm not good at all, because I sent you a tweet right now that you actually asked Sean about, and he just deviated from the actual issue, and he came up with a wrestler that is in America that now transitioned. The issue here is not transitioning, and he must just get that one right. We are talking of someone that was born in that way. Who does not come with advantages when we go to events? Who does not? Mm-hmm. Everyone comes with their own advantages. The question is, would that then affect their capabilities? Just like the prof is saying, can they prove that Caster producing certain amounts of testosterone can therefore be generalized and extended to her actual performance? They can't. And in Saul's saying, it means that then why should you regulate something that you cannot even prove that it actually going to affect the end results? Why would you do that? Because now they are just ducking and diving. They are thinking it might. But who does it?
I actually think, Prof, if I'm not mistaken, in the ruling, in the judgment that was given by KES, they also mentioned something about the side effects that is a concern for them.
Yeah, the side effects is a big concern. And it was really interesting to see that in there. We argued, of course, that the side effects made it disproportional. And that's a really important concept. When you have a regulation that is discriminatory, you can do that as long as it's necessary and proportionate. So in other words, do you introduce more harm than benefit? And the argument we were making is that you do. And I think we spoke a little bit before, even these last two callers, but the medical community has got some concerns about this. A week ago, the World Medical Association brought out a statement in which they said that they felt that this policy is medically unethical. And that's a really big deal, because what it means is that any doctor who is compliant with this is potentially in breach of their medical ethics. And that's a problem for the implementation side of this policy. So I share those concerns, and that's part of the reason that I can only speak for myself.
Yeah.
Part of the reason I was on that team was to try and get this set aside, because those concerns to me trump fairness for other athletes in competition. So again, what it comes down to is she probably has an advantage. We can't quantify exactly what that advantage is. And in the absence of that certainty, I don't think it's justified to introduce the medical risk.
Let's go to Joseph in Rustenburg. Good morning, Joseph.
Good morning. How are you, my brother?
Ngiyaphila, Bob.
Good, man. You know, this saga of Caster Semenya, it's boring. Because of, I don't want to say much because of Caster, she is black or white. The thing is, now testosterone of Caster is high. And they're saying she must go and run 5,000. And the scientists, and now if Caster, she's beating the ladies in 5,000, where to go now? Is she going to run 10,000? When she beat them, I mean, people, you know, let's leave Caster the way she is. It's like when we are born genius. They not say, no, this one is a genius. He must go and study alone. Let them leave Caster, enjoy her life, and then they must train hard and then chase Caster. That's all. That's all I wanted to say.
Okay, thank you, Joseph. Let's go to Centurion where Nzama is. Good morning, Nzama.
Good morning, Jen and the prof. Quick one, because of time. You see, there's a swimmer. His name, I think, is Michael Phelps. I don't know if I'm pronouncing the surname correctly. It was scientifically proven that his arms were longer than the normal human being arms, if I were to put it that way. And in that sense, it was also giving him an advantage to the likes of Chad Leclerc and the rest of the swimmers in this era. And he was let go until he sort of called it quit by himself, and nothing was done. So here I'm looking at the scientific aspect of this and also the race issue that we're talking about. Michael is white, and nothing was done up until he said, you know what, I don't want to swim anymore. And that was proven. And every time when he's swimming, even the commentators will also say the same thing with his hands and his body structure pertaining how he will perform. So what I'm saying to the prof is that I understand we're looking at the biological aspect of this prof, but the fact is that we tend to sort of put difficult or unfair measures when it comes to black athlete rather than compared to our white counterparts. If this should have been done when Michael was still competing, I don't think this noise could have been the same when it comes to this Kester issue. It is a race matter if you look at it in how it's been done, but also in what the IAF should have been done, it was also to look at whether Michael that time was competing, was having an unfair advantage to the other athlete. Thanks, Adrian.
Okay, then thank you so much. Prof, and this is something that has been coming up over and over again. Michael Phelps, double jointed. Why wasn't he subjected to the same? Is it a fair comparison to make?
No, it's an often made comparison, which I'll be honest, does frustrate me a little bit. The first question I'd ask anyone, including the most recent caller, is why do we have men and women compete separately? Why is there a separate category for women? Why do we have a Usain Bolt and a Shelly-Ann Fraser? Why do we give a medal to David Rudisha and Caster Semenya? And the answer is because society and sport has decided that the difference between men and women is so large that if we didn't keep them separate, women would disappear from sport completely. If every single human being ran the same race, the best woman would be 10 to 12% behind the best man. So women are, in effect, a protected sporting category. And I don't mean protect in a condescending way. I mean that we are trying to protect the integrity of women's sport. We don't have the same policy for long arms in swimming. So we don't care that Michael Phelps might have long arms. He doesn't, by the way, just to correct that. Michael Phelps' arms are normal for his height. We don't care that someone might have big feet. We don't care that someone's got big lungs or small or slow twitch muscle fibers, because we've decided in sport that there's not going to be a category for people with small feet or short arms. So when you ask why did they not regulate Michael Phelps, the reason they didn't regulate Michael Phelps is because there was nothing to regulate, because his long arms didn't put him into a different category compared to someone with short arms. The reason we have to ask questions about men and women and sex and biology is because we do have a category for women and we do have a category for men. Now, I'm not saying this to try and convince you that Caster Semenya shouldn't be allowed to run as a woman. I was in the courtroom trying to defend her rights to run as a woman. But you cannot ignore the concept that men have an advantage compared to women, and a sports authority has to try and manage the line between them. The moment you draw a line between one category and another, you have to defend that line. And the IAAF think that they've got good reason to defend the line using testosterone. I don't agree with them, but I don't think that they're wrong to have a line. I just think they can't defend it the way they're trying.
Professor, just in closing, how soon would Kasta need to take a decision on whether to appeal or not?
Well, the policy comes into effect immediately. So if she is going to take the medication, she's got until next Wednesday, 8th of May. If she's going to appeal, she has 30 days, which takes us to the 1st of June, or the 31st of May, rather. So the appeal process is 30 days, but the regulation to lower her testosterone is 1 week. So she has to start doing it almost straight away.
Okay, then thank you so much, Professor Ross Tucker, who was part of Custer's legal team that were arguing why the IAAF came to a conclusion that is unfair and discriminatory towards Caster Semenya. We've come to the end of the program. Thank you so much for being part of the discussions that have been taking place as well as the debates. I hope we've been able to help you to make a decision on what you'll do on the 8th of May or which party you'll be voting for on the 8th of May, and brought some light to the discussion around Caster Semenya, where she finds herself now and what decision she will eventually take, as you just heard there from Professor Ross Tucker. Dumisang Ndlovu is standing by.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.